Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, family, to another edition of Let's Speak On It, the show where you need to let your voice and your vote be heard. I'm your host, Jazz Irving, and since this is only our third broadcast, I want to inform you of what our mission statement is. We aim to inform our voting listeners of current news and trends happening on the political front that impact their lives by having open conversation and sharing of information and opinions. In this technological age that we have so many, so much information overload and 30-second sound bites that can unfairly represent the truth, we want to basically filter out some of that noise thereby misleading the general public. And we are starting a grassroots movement to get the public to act in upcoming elections to make informed decisions and elect those that will truly have the best interests of the country and nation at heart, and not those of special interests, big business, and signing pledges that impede the spirit of cooperation. We believe this will help elect government officials that will set the country back on a reasonable path to prosperity and be a leader to the rest of the world. You know, we decided on a program of this nature basically because the timing is such that we need to mobilize now in order to be successful in 2012 elections. Our goal is basically to get President Obama reelected and to take back the House and maintain control of the Senate. It's a call to action as we need to fight back before Republicans completely hand over the government to corporations while setting labor back 100 years. We need to mobilize an army of Democratic, independent, and some Republican voters to reverse and stop the current direction of the Republican Party and Tea Partiers. And it's going to be an uphill battle, but together we can do this. We cannot afford to sleep on it. And this show and our success will only be possible with your input, ideas, and action. This is a vehicle for us to discuss and share information that doesn't always make the mainstream media. So please, don't be afraid to chime in the conversation. You have information or an idea or a totally different perspective that we haven't considered, then you need to share it with us. Our call-in number is 646-378-0763, and you can listen at that number. If you want to speak, simply press 1 to cue you, and I will bring you online. Now, in support of our national mission, we look at politics not only in a national level, but the state and local politics matters as well. And I'm sure we've all seen the events occurring around the country, as we saw in the recall elections in Wisconsin, similar movements in Ohio and Michigan, proposals to change voting regulations in over 30 states in an attempt to disenfranchise minorities, the elderly, and some of our young voters. So we have to help out as much as we can on all fronts. And along that line, we have a special guest today, Mr. Leandrew Mills III, and he is seeking election for the state Senate in District 1 in Jacksonville, Florida. And let me bring him online right now. Mr. Mills, are you there?
Mr. Irving.
How are you doing today, sir?
Man, I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I'm happy
That's
to be
excellent.
A part of the show. You know, we tried it last week. I enjoyed the show nonetheless, but I'm happy to be on.
Well, I thank you for being patient with us and coming back on with us. If you could, tell us a little bit about your background.
Oh, you know, that's a book. I'll see if I can give just a brief synopsis. Native of Jacksonville, Florida, you know, graduated from public schools, William Marion Raines High School, subsequently went off to college, attended Morehouse for a little bit, and then I ended up finishing at Edward Waters College here in Jacksonville. Co-owner of a small business, family owned company, a full service pest control company named Available Pest Control here. You know, we've been involved in the pest control industry since about 94. We were formerly known as Mills Exterminating. We sold that company, and then we got the bug again and started with a brand new company called it Available Pest Control, and we've been running and gunning ever since, because Florida is terribly conducive to this industry, because anyone that's listening that lives in Florida knows we have plenty of bugs. So it's one of your more recession-proof industries when it comes to, you know, job creation and just, you know, necessity. You know, some people will live with bugs, but it's definitely a necessity. On the political front, never held public office before, but have always been involved with politics in some sort, you know, incessant volunteering, and just having a passion for people and a compassion for the situations of we would call the underserved communities. It just always seems like when major decisions are made, or when, you know, the major decision makers are at the table and it's time to make decisions, those decisions, although they impact everyone, they always seem to affect the underserved the most. And we really don't utilize our voice, and we don't, to this day, understand the true power of democracy and how revolutionary it is if it's utilized correctly. And that goes from just us being completely disconnected, a little naive, a little ignorant. You know, I don't mean to be harsh, but that's just what it is. It's, you know, it's ignorance. And we just need to become more engaged, empowered, and, you know, your site on Facebook is so refreshing. And this radio show is so refreshing because it does exactly what I'm attempting to do in my run for state senate, which is empower, enlighten, engage the constituency, because a lot of what happens because we just aren't aware of what's going on, and we're completely apathetic, and we need to engage and utilize our vote to get the people in office that are going to make decisions that are in our best interest. We need to take the country back.
Understand. And that's exactly what we're all about. Now, just to piggyback on you, you said you were a small business owner. And I will say this. One of the things we do as part of this program is we like to advertise small business. Since all you hear in mainstream media and from different politicians that small business actually is the engine driving employment to get people off of unemployment rolls. So we are basically putting together a directory of small businesses around the country as we get information.
Okay.
And encouraging our listeners and those on Facebook to patronize those businesses in hopes of, one, generating more revenue for the business, and in so doing, actually causing that business to grow and want to hire individuals and take them off the unemployment rolls. So if you could, or somebody on your staff, email me at letspeakonit@gmail.com with that information, and we'll put that in our directory to put out to everyone else.
Beautiful. God bless you. That's a beautiful thing. Small businesses need all of the help that they can get, because you're absolutely right. Small businesses are part of the major lifeblood of the economy as far as, you know, spurring economic development and job creation. So we need to support that infrastructure.
Okay. Now, I would like to ask you, why did you decide at this time to run?
Well, because I felt like there was a void, and I felt like I was the only viable candidate at the time. I did conduct research. I did ask quite a few people, you know, what their thoughts and their sentiments were regarding the race and the other candidates that it planned on running. I guess your quote-unquote career politicians, as some would describe them. And, you know, I really got a lot of encouragement to run. A lot of people felt like, you know, having a fresh new face in the race was something that would, you know, invigorate not just Jacksonville, but the other districts involved, and give an alternative, you know, an alternative voice on the issues, and give people an alternative choice when it comes to the candidates. You know, and I'm the young candidate. I'm only 35, you know, and I'm running against some seasoned politicians, but you know, everyone's saying that, okay, well, we're seeing them now because, you know, it's campaign time, but they really haven't done anything for the community. And I think after I heard that about 15, 16 times, that was more than enough, you know, for me to go ahead and say, you know, although what I jumped into was a big race, it is, you know, and it was risky, but you know, you have three types of people. You have spectators, instigators, and participators. And the world is unfortunately filled with spectators and instigators. And we sit on the sidelines and we complain about what's going on. We're not proactive. We're very reactive. We wait until a decision has been made, and then we complain and get upset about it and try to change it when it can't be changed after the decision has been made. So I felt like I wanted to be one of those that decided to participate in the process. And if when I went around and asked people if they had said, you know what, well, you know, I think that, you know, the other candidates, they've really been good, you know, they've done this, they've done that, then I would have stepped back and I would have supported, you know, I would have supported the other candidates that were running. But, you know, there was such a clamoring for someone else. You know, and just the fact that I was young and fresh, you know, a lot of people were completely, you know, invigorated by that. And it encouraged me, and it gave me, you know, like I said, the courage to want to jump into the race, to stimulate it and to give people an option to get some real change.
Okay. And I know you've already opened up and told us quite a bit. But in specifics, can you give us an outline of exactly what your platform is?
The platform, you know, number one, most importantly, is job creation. You know, you're talking about in Florida alone, an 18.5% unemployment rate when you factor in the individuals who aren't on the unemployment rolls because they're no longer actively seeking employment. You know, they've just given up, you know. So when you add them into the equation, that's a very high rate of unemployment. And then, of course, when you look at, when you segment it by race, the unemployment rate for African Americans is extremely high, very dismal. So small businesses, going back to the small business engine, Florida was just approved for $98 million as far as loan money, specifically for small businesses. So we're not the only ones that understand the power of small businesses as far as economic development and job creation goes, especially with startups. And there are a lot of people out there in downtimes who have these visions, and they have these ideas about businesses that they would like to start, and they've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, and this is a perfect time for that. This is the time when you see the whole entrepreneur and startup thing proliferate during the times of economic recession or an economic downturn. So you have small business incubators and programs that are administered through organizations like the Jacksonville Urban League, who are looking for individuals that they can mentor and offer the resources and give the advice and partner with to help them build fledgling small businesses that can, you know, help employ folks. You know, mm-hmm. not just that. You know, a lot of people talk about manufacturing. I think that would be a little bit more difficult. You have to look more at, you know, tax reform, you know, reforming your education policies and trade policies and different things before you can lure manufacturing, even though 70% of the research and development that goes on in America is for manufacturing. But once the R&D has been done, then the actual manufacturing goes on in China and India, as we know. So, you know, trying to get manufacturing here is hard, but we do have the Jack Port. We have the port here. So we have some different projects and initiatives coming up that could steer job growth in the port area. So we will focus on that as well. Education is a big issue, and not just in Florida, but everywhere, but Florida specifically, you know, and just improving the inequality of funding and resources, especially when it comes to the neighborhood schools, especially the schools in the African-American areas. You know, there's such a huge disparity in how the resources and funding is allocated.
Right.
So we want to work on that, because Governor Scott took a huge cut out of the education budget, because number one, when I get there, I'm not for education cuts. You know, because you have four basic necessities of life: food, water, shelter, and education. Education is the one thing that will ensure that you're able to, on a consistent basis, get the other three necessities. So you can't, when you're talking about making hard decisions, which I understand when you're talking about balancing a state budget, it's difficult, but you don't want to take away anything from education, because that is the foundation. When you're talking about jobs, employers want to hire educated individuals. So if you have a poor educational system, then the individuals that you're looking to hire won't be educated. So how can you hire competent and efficient employees,
right,
if they aren't receiving the proper education? So everything kind of goes hand in hand. And then there's one more issue, because I have a ton of them, but one more that I'm very passionate about is the restoration of rights for ex-offenders. You know, one of the first things that Governor Scott did when he made it as governor in Tallahassee was he changed the clemency laws and made it a lot more strict, a lot more tougher for ex-offenders to get their rights restored. And depending on the charge, it can take anywhere from 5 to 7 years for you to gain your rights back once you served your time, paid your dues, your restitution, everything that was asked of you. You paid your dues, you're back in society, you're trying to go on the right path. You know, a lot of these individuals have families. They have wives. They have moms that they need to take care of, children that need to be fed. They want to be productive and active contributors to society. But after so long of searching and searching and searching and trying to do right, and you're not given an opportunity to be the good person that you're trying to be, then that recidivism rate comes into play, because you're going to inevitably turn back to a life in the streets and continue, because they have to eat. They have to eat, and they have to buy whatever their necessities are. And if no one is willing to give them an opportunity, then they're going to find it wherever they can get it. And most likely that's going to be with a life of crime. You know, so I'm very, very passionate about that, because I know a lot of family members, and I have friends who have made mistakes in the past and have paid their debt to society and are looking to right their wrongs, and they're just not being given a fair shot. So, you know, we're right now experiencing a lot of crime here in Jacksonville, a lot of shootings. As of recently, probably almost 10 deaths within the past 2 weeks because of drug-related crimes. And these are probably individuals who have been in jail before and who came
Just curious, in Jacksonville, is there, you know, we've heard what the national average is as far as like 16.7% of unemployment among blacks. Are you experiencing a higher or about that national average in the Jacksonville area?
Yes, about that national average, maybe 2 points. Higher, probably more around 18%, but somewhere in that neighborhood, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that's why with this company, with Available Pest Control, the family business that I co-own, you know, we try, we research a lot of programs, and we try to take advantage of every program out there necessary to employ as many people as we can, especially ex-offenders. You know, we've employed many ex-offenders through various programs that are offered both on the state level and federal level. because that's something that, you know, that we firmly believe in, giving people a second, you know, a second opportunity.
Well, that's quite admirable. That really is. You don't find very many companies that are willing to take chances, you know, once somebody's been incarcerated and for making a mistake, and that's basically what it boils down to. They made the wrong decision, made a mistake, paid for their mistake, and come back into society to try to be a contributing member and just aren't seem to be given that second chance.
Right.
So I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Now, you know, they're in the news lately and all across the internet, there have been a lot of changes or proposed changes to voter ID requirements and registration changes in many states. Have there been changes in Florida? And if so, is that a hindrance to your possibility of being elected?
I don't believe it's a hindrance as of right now to the possibility of me personally being elected. But Governor Scott and the Florida legislature has attempted to make some changes that the American Civil Liberties Union are currently fighting, as far as the whole voter suppression thing that I even heard you mention, I think, on the show last week. You know, some that would affect especially college kids. I mean, but we understand why this is systematically being done, you know, because we have a major election coming up, 2012, and a lot of these same individuals that are being affected who were instrumental in helping President Obama get elected, those are the individuals that are being targeted and being disenfranchised because, you know, it's that partisan power struggle. You know, the Republicans are currently in power. You have the Tea Party movement, and they have a stronghold, especially in the Florida legislature, because in the Senate, you know, there are 28 Republicans currently in versus 12 Democrats. So that supermajority that they have currently, they want to continue that because, you know, with their supermajority, the policies go in their favor, you know, or they have more control in shaping policies and legislation and what gets passed. So, yeah, there have been several attempts, some successful, some unsuccessful, but the ACLU is valiantly fighting to have a lot of that overturned by filing lawsuits.
Okay, and I know, like, for recently in South Carolina, they just passed one of these same laws requiring the ID. And one of the strategies they've also been using is shutting down the Department of Motor Vehicle locations in Democratic districts where they have to go to get the photo IDs made. Are you seeing any of that happen in Florida?
Not in Jacksonville, and I really haven't heard about any specifics of them doing anything like that anywhere else in Florida. I mean, Mr. Irvin, that's not to say that it isn't being done, but
no, I haven't
been made aware of it. And I know with our special election coming up, I plan on sitting down and having a meeting with one of the directors of the ACLU about that, to see what the strategies were to combat those attempts, especially not with the special election, with the presidential election coming up in 2012, to see what strategies will be implemented to combat any attempts at voter suppression.
Okay. One other thing, since the 2010 census, you know, there's been a lot of ebbs and flows, I'll say, in populations in various states. Some have reduced, some have enlarged, and therefore redistricting maps are being redrawn. Has redistricting been a factor causing any kind of political party changes to your constituency?
Well, not on the state level. I know we're also going through redistricting on a local level, so it's kind of, you know, weird that it's been more impactful on a local level as far as, you know, the city council is concerned, and then well, not just that, also the some of the House of Representatives are also being affected, but we haven't heard anything definitive. There's just been a lot of rumors. The last thing I heard, which, I mean, I heard this as soon as they start, you know, going around and having the forums on redistricting, the whole draw the maps, you know, having the citizens to draw their own ideal maps. But from what I'm hearing, the maps have already been drawn. We're just in an anticipatory stage where we're waiting. We're waiting for the maps to be released, so that we can see exactly how they've been redrawn. But I think that, again, just like with the voter suppression and everything else, it's all strategic. It's all strategic, and we know that some of these are going to be drawn, and it's going to favor the majority party. I'll just put it like that.
Okay, well, I mean, and I understand it, because that's the strategy that we're seeing them deploy all across the country. There are, from what I understand, about 31 states that are majority Republican controlled, either the House and the Senate or governors. And so, therefore, yeah, we're seeing a lot of this. And, you know, the example has been out there with Wisconsin, Ohio, and Michigan. And actually, when people thought with the recall elections that occurred in Wisconsin that Governor Walker would kind of back off a little bit, but I see he's pushing straight ahead in some of the strategies that he intended to put in place, and he's still going forward with them.
Oh, yeah, these guys are resilient, Mr. Irvin. They have a definite agenda, and that's why it's so important for, you know, just, you know, individuals like you. That's why I just applaud. I mean, I supremely applaud what you're doing, because this is exactly what we need to combat their attempts at just maintaining a stronghold, because we'll never get the things passed and done that we need to get in order to improve our situation if we don't become engaged and get out and let our voices be heard.
I understand. Are you seeing, well, let's say on a national level with all the things that are going on, and I understand you said the maps are being redrawn, so you haven't really seen that. So considering that Florida is a predominantly, I'll say, Republican-controlled state, now, I don't think your population doesn't really weigh that out, does it? Or at least in certain districts?
It doesn't, but we don't go out and vote.
Gotcha.
That's the problem. And that's why I felt like one of the things that I wanted to, well, one of my objectives for running was to take an, you know, what would have been, no, and no disrespect to the other candidates or my opponents, but realistically, it would have been an otherwise mundane race, you know, because a lot of people just would not have been in tune to what was going on, the fact that it was a special election, still going out canvassing and knocking on doors. A lot of people still aren't aware, you know, so I'm enlightening individuals as I go to neighborhoods and knock on doors. You know, I'm asking, one of the first questions that I'm asking after I introduce myself is, were you aware that there's a special election currently going on? And I'm getting a lot of resounding no's. You know, so with me, you know, not, and I'm not tooting my own horn, but that was the whole thing. I just know how dismal voter turnout, even for our, we had a major mayoral race that concluded with us being able to get the first black mayor in Jacksonville's history. And even though a humongous, I'm all about 85 to 90% voter turnout. That's what it should be. But even though it wasn't that, there was still a significant increase in the amount of voters that came out, because there was a piece of history that was attached to it, which I think helps. It helps spur interest in the election because the whole prospect of there possibly being the first black or first African-American mayor of Jacksonville. And that was historical. So it drove a lot of people that otherwise would not have, you know, felt compelled to go and vote. It drove them to the polls. So at this point, with all of the different distractions that we deal with every day, to get people invigorated and interested and motivated to become a part of the political process and feel compelled to go vote, we have to, I guess, find ways to juice these intermediary elections up, find a way to juice them up to make them interesting. I mean, everything has to have some sliver of drama to it. I mean, you're competing with reality shows, and everything has drama inherent in it nowadays. So, you know, the drama to this race is you have a young 35-year-old African-American male with no political experience, never held political office before, facing two incumbents that have been in the House of Representatives before for 8 years apiece, but the community feels like they haven't done anything, you know, so they want to see a fresh face, and it just added flavor. It added flavor to the race, you know, and that's going to get more people September 20th for the special election, and even for the earlier race, it's going to get more people out to vote.
Okay. Well, you're definitely going to have to check back in with us after that special election and let us know the results that you've been successful in obtaining that seat.
Yes, sir. Speaking into existence, brother.
All right. Let's see. You have a website?
Yes, sir. I definitely do. It is millsforsenate.com. millsforsenate.com.
All right.
We'll make sure we get
that published as well.
Thank you. And then it has the Facebook fan page, and Twitter that you can get to those directly from the homepage of the website.
Okay. And I was going to say, when you mentioned earlier that you've checked out our group, Take Back the House in 2012.
Yes, sir.
Anybody you want to recommend and bring into that group, we'll gladly take them on. We're trying to actually shoot for 1,000 members by the end of this month. Just in that one particular group, we're at about 665, I believe, right now. We've got a couple of other groups out there. The Reality of Rick Perry's Texas, and there's about 200 and some odd folks in that one. And then we've got Veterans for Obama, Veterans Against Rick Perry. We've got Ward 8 Democrats, and there's a new one that we just discovered here recently called MoveOn.org, which is a national organization that we can actually leverage from a grassroots level locally.
Okay.
So bring them on, because we share all of that information in Take Back the House in 2012. So lastly, if what can we do to help your campaign?
Support. I mean, like my Facebook fan page, and you know, any donation, because of course, although I'm thinking outside the box as far as ways to get exposure, especially in my district, because it's such a huge district and I don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars in a campaign war chest in order to get flashy commercials and billboards and what have you. And I'm trying to keep it grassroots and as pure as possible so that I'm not having to get into that position where I'm tempted to take anything from a bunch of special interest groups or individuals that I'm going to become beholden to once I do get in the office. So, you know, I want it as pure and as organic as possible. So any donations, I don't care if it's $1, $5, 50 cents. I don't know if you could do 50 cents on your card, but any donations to the campaign would be greatly appreciated. I'm not asking for a particular amount, but any assistance, and like I said, just, you know, giving me the support, showing me the love, keeping me encouraged by commenting on the Facebook fan page and becoming a fan, that's what would drive this campaign more than anything.
All right, then. Well, Mr. Mills, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and talk with us and share exactly what it is you're trying to do down there in Florida. And we wish you much success. Matter of fact, we'll speak it into existence that you're going to be in that Senate seat come later on this month. You're going to have that election in your pocket.
Yes, sir. Fresh ideas for a fresh Florida. Mr. Irvin, thank you. I'm a big fan, now a big fan, or been a big fan since I listened last week of the show. I think that what you're doing is so absolutely necessary, and I applaud everybody who is a member of Take Back the House and who are currently engaged and also reaching out to their friends and family members to make them engage and empower them as well and get them to, you know, become a part of the political process, because if we ever want to experience change, you have to get involved. You can't be a catalyst for change sitting on the sidelines. I just put it like that.
I understand. All right, then. Well, I thank you for your comments. And at this time, I'm going to open up the lines for anybody that wants to call in and possibly comment on anything that we've discussed just now, or if you've got a new topic you want to talk about, please feel free to do that. And then once again, I thank you very much, Mr. Mills, for taking your time and joining us this evening.
Thank you. Be blessed.
You too. Hello, caller. Phone number 7273.
Yes. Good afternoon. How you doing?
All right. How you doing? You're breaking up a little bit on me. Please give us your name and where you calling from.
Calling from Washington, D.C. Name is Wesley. How you doing? I just wanted to say to Mr. Mills, it was nice to hear his voice. I'm not sure if he's still on or not. I did grow up in Jacksonville, Florida myself, on University of Atlantic up in that area. And I'm trying to read up more about him myself. I still have family members down there, and maybe one day I'd like to meet him when I come down there and tell him congratulations on the Senate seat.
All righty. And he's still with us listening in, so I'm sure he's gotten your best wishes for him.
Oh, great, great. And, thank you very much, and hopefully I'll talk to him soon.
All right, then.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time to call in. All right, family. Next topic I'd like to talk about a little bit is kind of what we've touched on. Well, the president, as we know, is going to unveil his jobs plan tomorrow. There are many that are speculating that he will try to present a plan that will have some key initiatives, but will be in proportion to what he feels the Congress will pass. There are others that hope he will present a major plan that will be big and bold to really get the economy and jobs growing. And many want to see the president take it to the Congress and force their hand to either accept his plan or reject it altogether, setting the stage for a fierce battle in the next year's elections, in particular in the House, to get many of them voted out of office. Considering the current disapproval rating for Congress at 82%, you would think this would be a no-brainer. But we can't sit idly by and hope for the best. We have to make our voices heard, educate one another, and make it happen. Some of the preliminary things that he's talked about that have already hit the press is he's talking about a $300 billion jobs program, an infrastructure bank, some tax cuts, and hopefully that's aimed at payroll taxes, because I believe he wants to extend the payroll taxes. Because that's one of our more regressive taxes that we have. So I'm hoping for the best. I'm hoping that he's going to be bold tomorrow in that decision and come out swinging. If anybody has a comment on that or would like to express their thoughts or concerns on it, feel free to hit us up. The number is 646-378-0763. We talked briefly during the interview with Mr. Mills about changes to voter requirements, and that's on the move. You know, we've all seen the events that occurred around the country. We saw the recall elections in Wisconsin, similar movements in Ohio and Michigan. Proposals to change voting regulations are happening in over 30 states in an attempt to disenfranchise minorities, the elderly, and some of our young voters. And you can probably guess who those people are. Above all, anyone not likely to vote Republican. As Sarah Palin would imply, the people who are not real Americans. That's what she refers to as racial minorities, immigrants, Muslims, gays, intellectuals. Anyone who doesn't look, think, or talk like the GOP base. So we have to help out as much as we can on all fronts. Ever since Republicans captured the majority in a number of state legislators last November, they have systematically attempted to make it more difficult to vote. By onerous voter ID requirements in Wisconsin, for example, Republicans have legislated photo IDs while simultaneously shutting down Department of Motor Vehicle offices in Democratic constituencies, while at the same time lengthening the hours of operation of DMV offices in GOP constituencies, by narrowing registration periods, by residency requirements that may disenfranchise university students, and Wisconsin's legislative actions have become the Republican playbook for the entire country in states where they have majority rule. South Carolina, as we discussed last week on the show, just passed such a bill that is estimated to disenfranchise approximately 200,000 voters in the state. They have done the same in regard to closing DMVs and Democratic districts, only they tried to sugarcoat it by saying they would provide transportation for those without it to get to the DMVs as long as they could produce a birth certificate, proof of residency, and proof of citizenship. Now, which voters do you think it harms? I can assure you it's not Republican voters. In Texas, you can use an expired firearms permit to register, but you can't use a valid military ID. So I haven't heard much feedback yet in regard to other states, but believe me, it's coming. The Republicans have shared their various forms of legislation through an organization known as the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. Members of ALEC basically consist of thousands of state legislators, each paying nominal fees to attend ALEC retreats and receive model legislation. Now, this model legislation is not necessarily drafted by them. It's typically drafted by corporations. And those corporations pay ALEC a king's ransom to access those legislators to distribute radical legislation that puts corporate interests over American workers and consumers. Some of those members, as we've seen in the news, the Koch brothers, Big Tobacco, and the drug industry. So while the membership appears to be public sector, corporate money dominates ALEC. ALEC claims to be nonpartisan, but its pro-corporate, anti-consumer mission is clear. ALEC has had a major hand in protecting oil companies, chemical manufacturers, and Wall Street banks. So this is just another aspect of voter suppression that's happening on a national level that's basically a central strategy of the Republican Party. If anybody cares to speak out on this and let us know what your feelings are, hit me up on the number 646-378-0763. And if you care to speak, press 1 on your phone and I will open the line for you. Hello. Hello, caller.
Hey,
86. Hi, how you doing?
Good. I finally figured it out.
If you care to speak, press 1 on your phone, and I will open the line.
Looks like we got a bit of an echo on the line here. Go ahead, caller.
So,
give
Jazz,
us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Jazz. I'm Evelyn Lugo. I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Hello. Hello, caller.
Hey,
and what would you like to comment on this evening?
Well, I'm interested in the voter suppression issue, and just wanting to make sure that folks out there are aware of what's going on and what the Republican agenda is, and voter suppression is top on their list of ways to take back the White House in the next election.
Would you? I tell you what, Evelyn. Would you care to talk to us a little bit about the group that you basically started on Facebook, Take Back the House,
yeah,
in 2012?
Sure. I didn't think it was going to become what it is right now, but it has become very active. It's a place where people can come to and talk politics. The group does support the reelection of Barack Obama. And in supporting his reelection, we also support or will work towards the removal of all Tea Party Republicans from the Congress so that the president can move forward with his agenda, with our agenda. So that's the basis of the group. We've gotten some great members, including yourself, and some really big thinkers, and we've got plans for participating at different agendas in the future. So we're pretty excited about where the group is going. Of course, when you have a group like this, you have all kinds of folks that are participating with different thoughts. But I think one thing that we're all on the same page on is the issue with voter suppression and how big the issue actually is. I don't know if you've taken a look, Jazz, but in Florida, the ACLU is presently suing Rick Scott for voter suppression, and they in turn have sued the federal government and have named our attorney general in their suit, which is going to slow everything down and cost the state of Florida a lot more money. But, you know, it'll anything to get to the finish line, which is their finish line is to make sure that people, that Democrats don't get to vote. And we're seeing that all over the country. If you go onto our website, our Facebook page, which is Take Back the House in 2012, you'll find in the documents page that there's a group of links that our members can take a look at, and one of them includes the state requirements for voter ID. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest things that we need to pay attention to in this election. In the past, we were always worried about just getting people registered to vote. It's much more than just getting people registered to vote right now. As you mentioned earlier in your conversation, in Wisconsin, they of course, made it more difficult or more challenging to vote, and they're requiring these picture IDs. And then once they've gotten that law to pass, they're closing down motor vehicle departments in Democratic areas and then extending the hours in Republican areas. And that's just one example of many. So I urge people, folks that are serious about this election and understand the ramifications, should a Republican, any one of these Republicans, take office in November of 2012, we really need to step up to the plate and, at a minimum, not only make sure that voters or eligible voters are registered to vote, but make sure that those that are registered to vote will actually be able to vote and not be turned away at the voting polls. So that's one thing that I would stress as far as the areas that we need to pay a lot of attention to in the next 10 months.
Agree. Just curious, and I don't mean to put you on the spot or anything, but what actually is your goal for the group? How large do you want this thing to go? Are we going to do something on a regional basis, or are we going to go state by state?
Well, we've just started putting together a strategy committee. Like I said, when we started the conversation, I put it together thinking this was just going to be a place where like-minded people could come in and have a discussion. But we are so energized, and there's so many members that want to do more than just talk on this group, that we will pay attention to that, and we will start working on putting together a strategy where we may get involved with other organizations. For example, we had 150 members that were going to the rally and the march on MLK weekend with Al Sharpton, looking for, you know, jobs. So there are things like that that we may become active with. There may be voter registration drives that we become active with. We haven't, the sky is the limit. If there are members in the group that are willing to work at different tasks, you know, we'll just continue to grow. And I'm not saying no to regional. I'm not saying no to national. I wouldn't say no to anything at this point. If we have members that want to move forward, and as long as the agenda stays the same, it is take back the House in 2012. And we do support the reelection of Barack Obama. If, as long as our members are moving that agenda forward, then there's no limits to what we can do.
Agree. Well, I want to thank you for calling in and for your comments and everything, and especially for being the catalyst in starting up Take Back the House in 2012.
Thank you, Jazz, and we're loving your show.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Keep up the good work.
I will talk to you later. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We're at a point now where, like I said, we try to advertise small businesses. And I advertised several last week. I won't do that again this week simply because we're limited on time and I haven't received any new information. Like I said, if you know of anyone that has a small business or you have a small business, send us an email to letspeakonit@gmail.com and we'll put that information on the air. We'll also create a document on our Facebook page with Take Back the House in 2012 where people can go to reference small businesses in their area. I mean, the idea kind of came when I originally grew up in Chicago, and we had a directory there when I was growing up for black businesses in Chicago. I don't want this to be limited to just black businesses. I want it to be small businesses, period. Women-owned, veteran-owned, service-disabled veteran-owned, minority, whatever small business you have, whatever product or service that you want to try to get out there so that we can support you in hopes of having you grow and that you can hire on more people to help you with your business, and actually, you know, that makes it become more successful. That's just a sign of your success that it's growing. So again, send us an email to letspeakonit@gmail.com. Well, tonight is the big debate, the Republican debate, and it's the first one in which we'll see Governor Rick Perry come forward and speak. And I understand he's not one that likes to be in these debates. He's not necessarily, I'll say, well suited for, because he kind of likes to shoot from the hip. So I'm really interested in watching what comes out of that tonight. And I'm hoping that a lot more of the listeners here will watch it as well, because we really need to pay attention to our enemies in order to defeat them. You know, it's like the old saying, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. You know, Rick Perry is the leading candidate. And some of the things that I can see right now that are going to be a thorn in his side, for example, it's ironic with the brush fires that have destroyed somewhere between 700 and 1,000 homes, and that's just depending on the source that's reporting it, that Governor Perry cut the budget for volunteer firefighters by 75%. And they are considered to be part of the first line of defense against brush fires and forest fires in that state. We talked about last week, back at the beginning of the year, he declared the state's anti-abortion legislation to be an emergency piece of legislation. It suffered a setback last week when a federal judge blocked portions of the legislation as it violated First Amendment rights. He wants to clear the way for corporations, doing away with regulations in certain government agencies, the EPA in particular. He feels hinders big business. Republican mantra for job creation is the same thing, whatever interferes with big business, and which we know that is a lie. His job creation record has produced mainly minimum wage employment, and his public sector jobs grew substantially, even though he wants to be considered as Mr. Small Government. But he's touting all this job growth when, in fact, it was of no direct reflection of any actions that he took. Most of it has been based off of the energy corporations that are in that area. let's see. One of the big things that I saw was his record for the death penalty. He has actually overseen 235 executions in his 10 years in office. Now, there's one that's on the books right now, and it involves a young man. Let me see if I can pull his name up here. It involves a young man by the name of Dwayne Edward Buck, and he's set to be executed by lethal injection on September 15th for murdering two people at the home of his ex-girlfriend in 1995. And the issue at hand isn't Buck's innocence, but the means by which his death sentence was obtained. Prosecutors established his guilt, but to secure a capital punishment conviction in Texas, they needed to prove what's known, what's called future dangerousness. And this is, I mean, if you look at, if you saw the movie Minority Report, it's almost like somebody's projecting the fact that you're going to commit a crime before it's committed, and therefore you get locked up. They had to provide, the prosecution had to provide compelling evidence that Buck posed a serious threat to society if he were ever to walk free. And they did so with the testimony of a psychologist by the name of Dr. Walter Quijano. That's Q-U-I-J-A-N-O. And he testified that Buck's race, he's an African-American, made him more likely to commit crimes in the future. And for the jury, that was enough to be heard. But it raised the obvious constitutional issues. Now, there's a Republican in the state of Texas by the name of John Cornyn, who has actually petitioned the governor and the parole board for clemency for this individual. So the question is, what is Governor Perry going to do between now and September 15th? If he follows his record, this guy will probably be put to death. And Perry is known for executing those that have been declared mentally retarded. Juvenile, individuals that have committed crimes while they were juveniles, and so forth. But he has the record of any governor in the country for the number of executions. In his 10 years, he's averaging basically two executions a month. He wants to do away with Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, calls them unconstitutional and Ponzi schemes. The other two top candidates, I'll say, Mitt Romney, he released his 59-point plan, jobs plan just the other day, and it looks just like he used the same one that he had when he was governing Massachusetts. He wants to promote zero taxes for corporations on repatriating profits onto American shores. Michelle Bachmann appears to be coming to the end of her 15 minutes of fame as her top strategist resigned, and he stated that the race now is between Perry and Romney. And she wants every family to be included on the tax rolls, even if they make less than $40,000 a year. So it looks like we've come to the end, and I will definitely look forward to next week's show. I thank everybody for calling in today and participating with us. Some other shows you may want to hear are DJ Patron on Mondays from 7 to 9 p.m., Mr. E on Tuesdays from 8 to 10, and Mina Holiday on Sundays from 7 p.m. for spoken word poetry. Once again, I thank everybody for listening to the show. I thank our guest interviewer, Mr. Leandrew Mills III out of Jacksonville, Florida, and wish him much success. And thank everyone else for your comments and participation in the show. And we will see you again next week.